acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a...
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 105, Fluff and Flame. Sunday, January 10th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. You can find links and photographs and notes about things that I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: The Front Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Gratitude Journal, and Yarn Lover at Large. Since I've been reintroducing myself and the podcast over the past few episodes, I have received a few questions about the theme song for the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast. I've been using the same song since episode one, and the song title is Saweet, S-A-W-E-E-E-T. It was written by my partner, Samuel St. Thomas. He composed the lyrics as well as the music, and it has been performed and recorded many, many, many times. Currently, it's being performed and has been recorded by Bovine Social Club, and that is the name of an Americana-style band that Samuel fronts and is based here in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania, with performers from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Sometimes they have some guest performers. And I am using the studio space to do my podcast recordings these days. Saweet is inspired by the natural world and sort of the feeling or the spirit at our home. There are many references to the natural world, and then there are also some quirky and suggestive references as well. I should have Samuel come in talk about this song on the podcast, but he keeps musician's hours, so my earlier recording time wouldn't really be convenient for him. Maybe we can work on that sometime in the future. So currently, Bovine Social Club is performing this song or some version of it quite a bit, and the song appears on their first album. So I have linked to the lyrics and also a part of the Bovine Social Club website where you can download a free copy of this song. The version of Saweet that I use for the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast was recorded by Samuel, and the performer is Krista Long, and she's accompanied by Cesar Diaz. I thought this version of the song was more in keeping with the mood of the podcast I was creating. And so I selected it at the very beginning, and I've kept it ever since. Many of you have commented that you really enjoy the show's theme music. I did get one review on iTunes from someone who said she liked everything except for the show's theme music. So it's always a matter of taste, and these decisions are very, very difficult to make. But I enjoy using the song, and at least for the foreseeable future, I will continue to play Saweet at the beginning and end of each podcast. The Front Porch. I have cast on a new sweater project. The pattern is Flaum by Justina Lorikowska. It appears in the fall 2015 issue of Amirisu. I saw this sweater on Ravelry when it first appeared. It was very, very popular and it sort of got a lot of mileage, and the photos of it are just gorgeous. But then I saw it in person because Mary Beth had knit this sweater and wore it to Rhinebeck. She has lent me the magazine, so I decided I would take advantage of that and cast on for this sweater. I have selected a 70% merino, 30% alpaca blend, and this is a sweater quantity of Misty Alpaca Maki that I've had for a little while, and I was, you know, very non-committal in terms of what I would knit with this yarn. But I thought that the blend would be appropriate because flaum translates to fluff or down or fine downy hair. And it seems that the pattern is intended for a wool blend that includes some alpaca or something that has a little bit of drape to it. The colorway is red velvet. It is a very deep red color. And I am knitting the small size and using the US size 7 needles that are suggested. This sweater is knit completely in 1x1 rib and fisherman's rib. So it is a constant knit, purl method. And I guess you make slow progress because of that. The texture of the fabric is very plush and dense, so I'm glad that I do have a yarn with some alpaca content, so it's not too bulky, and it does have a bit of drape to it. Of course, I'm already concerned that I don't have enough yarn, although Mary Beth said she used just over 1,000 yards, and I have, I think, 1,100 yards, and I'm knitting the same size that she did. And my gauge is appropriate according to the directions on the pattern, but I suppose it just feels like you're knitting and knitting because of the fisherman's rib. You're knitting and knitting, and it doesn't feel like the garment is growing very much, so it feels like a lot of yarn is being used. There was an invitation on Instagram to share how you knit and use the hashtag loop2loop to tag your video. So I thought this would be a good opportunity in a very short video to show both how I knit and how I purl. And I put a video on Instagram, and it received a lot of comments and attention. So thank you to those of you who made a comment. Quite a few people mentioned that they had never seen anyone purl that way before, and that maybe they would try to use that method. I had never seen anyone purl that way either. My purling method is a method I worked out when I first began knitting. Since I started with crochet, I was already accustomed to tensioning the yarn in my left hand. And I kept that exact tensioning for knitting. So I typically wrap the yarn around my pinky and then around my index finger. And then I hold it taut there. When I purl, I simply take my index finger and rotate it toward me and down. And then I tension it there so that I can grab it with the needle and pull it through to purl. So there's a lot of up and down and rotating with my index finger. I tend to knit, I guess, a slow to average pace. It was interesting when I made this recording of myself knitting just a few stitches. I actually recorded that quite a few times because I noticed that when I knit, I make a lot of missteps. It's not that I make a wrong stitch. I know how to make a stitch and I know if I have made an error, but there are a surprising number of missteps that I make with my fingers and my yarn as I'm knitting across a row. It is not error-free. It is not a smooth or seamless set of movements. And I wonder if that is true for most knitters. I was looking at some of the videos, and what struck me first is how quickly many of the folks are executing their stitches. It almost seems like the video is sped up, which I know it isn't, but they're incredibly rapid movements and it's difficult to see exactly what is going on. But they didn't seem to have the number of errors or missteps to their motions that I feel I have with mine. Maybe it's just a matter of being self-critical, I'm not sure. But I often feel like I make little tiny errors in my work, like I'll pierce through the ply of a yarn instead of grabbing the whole yarn, or I'll miss the entry point with my needle and then have to go back and do it again. And then eventually I execute each stitch appropriately, but I just found that very interesting. So I'd be interested on your feedback on that. And if you want to see some videos, it's fascinating to search the hashtag loop2loop, and it's the numeral 2, hashtag loop2loop. And you can see endless numbers of folks who are doing knit and purl stitches and other sorts of stitches as well. So that is Flaum by Justina Lorkowska in the Amira Sue Fall 2015 issue. I have also taken up a pair of socks that were in progress. I began by using Stacy Perry's Very Pink Designs pattern for knitting two socks at a time on Magic Loop. I was using US 1.5 needles at that time, and I have removed the socks. I've started cuff down and finished the leg of the sock. So I was ready for a heel, and I moved one of the socks to my US 1 DPNs, and I executed a strong heel. I have linked to the directions for this pattern on the notes on my pattern page if you're interested, and also in the show notes. The strong heel is designed for a cuff down sock. I believe it is a version of a flegel heel, but the flegel heel is typically knit for a toe up sock. That's my understanding at this point. And the strong heel is notable in that you do not have to put any stitches on hold. You are knitting around the entire circumference of the sock as you knit the heel. So it's very interesting. Your number of stitches builds to quite a number by the time you start decreasing. So I had a little bit of difficulty managing all of those stitches on my needles because I did receive 5-inch needles, and I really enjoy those. I thought that 6-inch double pointed needles might be a little more than I needed and a little more difficult to maneuver. But by the time I was done working all of the stitches and doing all the increases for this strong heel, I sort of wished that I had some 6-inch needles because it was getting to be a lot to handle. For this reason, I think this strong heel might be useful for someone who is knitting a sock on those 9-inch circular needles, because you never have to put any stitches on hold. You're always working all the way around. So that might be a comfortable heel to use for that purpose. I am knitting these socks in the Flying Saucer yarn, Fliegende Untertasse, And I did look up the colorway. It's colorway 2116, which is Sonnefleck. And I believe that means sunspot or sunspots. And sunspots would be Sonnenflecken, I think. But it's very bright, and every time I try to take a picture of these socks in progress, the photograph is totally blown out because it's like this orangey pink and some reds, and it's very, very difficult to capture in a photograph, but it's a nice, bright, sunny kind of colorway and a lot of fun to work with. I am now working on the foot of the sock and contemplating which type of toe to use and exactly when to start the toe decreases. So I will report on my progress for them in a future episode. Ever-expanding skill set. This year, I am selecting an ingredient on which to focus each month and opening a thread on the Yarns at Yinhu board on Ravelry so that you can share what you're doing by cooking along with the ingredient of the month, or you can feel free to choose your own ingredient. And the idea is that you make a concerted effort over the course of the month to try that ingredient in a few different preparations or a few different types of dishes. I thought I'd start January with something very simple, basic, nourishing, comforting: potatoes. So all month long, I'm exploring new recipes and thinking about different ways to prepare potatoes. This weekend, Samuel and I tried something that we've had many times, but we've never made at home, which is potato jackets, or sometimes, especially in the US, they're usually referred to as potato skins. We used a recipe from the Irish Pub cookbook, and just altered it to what we had in the fridge. Really, Samuel was preparing this recipe because I was very much into taking the tree down and putting away all of the decorations. So we had been working on that together, and then he moved to the kitchen and started working on dinner, and I just kept working on the Christmas dismantling. I like this recipe because I can see a lot of applications for using leftovers, or not even leftovers so much, but just small bits of ingredients that you might have in your refrigerator that's like too small a quantity to make a dish or serve by themselves. So our potato jackets had some Greek yogurt, a variety of grated cheeses, quite a bit of crumbled bacon, and some steamed broccoli in them. I was also thinking that leftover cream-based soups would be a great leftover to use in a potato jackets recipe, because you bake the potatoes, you cut them in half, you scoop out most of the potato, and then before you put it back in to the skin, you mix it with something to make it creamy, tasty, cheesy, salty. And some leftover cream-based soup would be a great addition to that, I think. Imagine if you had cream of broccoli or cream of mushroom soup or potato leek soup. That could be a good idea. It's also a great way to use very small bits of leftover meats or charcuterie or even lunch meat that might be left over. So it's a great dish to utilize leftovers. Connected to this idea of leftovers, I had mentioned that one month you might want to use leftovers as your ingredient of the month and just put a lot of thought and energy into thinking about how you can utilize leftovers in innovative ways. RSR instructor asked, at what point are leftovers considered expired? And I think that's a great question, one that I'm interested in hearing your input. How do you determine the expiration date of leftovers? Presumably things are already cooked, but maybe not. Some leftovers might not be cooked. How do you decide? What do you do? If you have ideas or suggestions about that, I hope you will share them in the thread for this episode. This week, I'm looking forward to a few more recipes involving potatoes. Judy in the Dyes posted her version of a potato tart. She found the recipe on Smitten Kitchen. I have linked it in the show notes, and I plan to cook this tart today. Mine will be baked in a pie crust rather than in a tart pan because I don't have a tart pan. But I think it looks really tasty and good. There's blue cheese and milk and egg mixture, and I plan on putting some leftover bits of ham into my version. Also, in the most recent issue of Taproot magazine, there is an entire article dedicated to casseroles, and the very first casserole features potato, kale, and sausage. It looks delicious. Judy also posted that she has made this version of the casserole. It's a very large serving size, so I think it's something that could easily be cut in half, or maybe you could make a quarter of the recipe to serve just a few people. So I'm looking forward to trying that one as well. Speaking of Taproot magazine, that is something I'd like to talk about in Gratitude Journal this episode. I first heard about Taproot from Sarah on the Knitting Pipeline podcast. It's been at least a year since she mentioned it in a conversation with Bronwyn and Paula, and it sort of went on my radar, and I took a look at it online and thought that maybe that would be a subscription I would like to receive. But at the time, I felt a little bit overwhelmed by some subscriptions that I had, and I wasn't making the time to look through all of them thoroughly. And I just felt like I was being wasteful. So I gradually let all of my subscriptions lapse and thought very carefully about one thing that I wanted to receive that I could make use of in my life each month or each time it arrived. And one of the high points of Taproot is that it's a quarterly magazine. So I thought, well, that would be nice, getting something seasonally and being able to really devote time and attention to it. So I asked for this publication as a Christmas present, and I received it, and Samuel had them send me a back issue. So I did receive the Folk issue, and now issue 16, the Shelter issue, has made its way to our home. I am very grateful to be receiving this publication. It's something that Samuel is interested in as well as me. There's quite a diversity of different topics that are covered, and I love the way it's put together. It is advertisement free, which I feel is a very big commitment for a magazine, and so I would like to support that. One of the things that made me a little bit uncomfortable with some of the publications I was receiving is the extreme number of advertisements in some of them. And I just try my very best to live a life that is free of advertising. It's one of the reasons that we don't have television in our home. It's one of the reasons I listen to National Public Radio and public radio stations rather than commercial radio. And I very much enjoy receiving a publication that doesn't encourage me to make a lot of purchases, because as smart as I think I am, I do realize how susceptible I am to those advertisements. So that has been a lot of fun to receive, and I thought I would share a poem from the folk issue having to do with making candles. And there's a beautiful illustration to accompany it. The poem references Hestia, the Greek goddess of the hearth and home, also sometimes the goddess of cooking and the altar. This is titled, When We Gathered to Stock Up on Light, by Kaisi Bellow. We dipped 200 candles that day. In late fall, the box elders gone to gold over your garden, and we gone to wool shawls and boots, and each other. Wicks ready, our hands pass them forward and back from the kettles of honey-scented wax, thin strands that grow until they will bear the light of the sun beaming through us and the blossoms, the fire beneath the wax, the whole order of stars shifting as we tilt into winter. Bees settle on the drying rack, move between our hands as we lift and dip, hang and lift. We did not sing, but were a song. Hestia humming from her place beside the cookbox, stirring with a wooden spoon. Here, take this beauty and be warm. We took our delight, and now it sits at my table, flickering with every sweetness the year has brought and will bring. I've been continuing a meditative spindling practice. It's something I had begun long ago, and I let it lapse. And as the new year began, I really wanted to start that back up again and bring that into my life. And I've been thinking about this act of having a mantra or a series of things that are memorized and that you can chant in your mind as a way of gently pushing those intruding thoughts away. So sometimes it's difficult in meditation to just clear your mind. It's useful to have something strong and powerful and tranquil that you repeat over and over as a way to gently push other things from your mind. In my mind, those intruding thoughts are usually lists of things that I need to do. And once the list begins, I have a very difficult time not letting my mind go to all of the sequencing that needs to happen in order to get tasks complete. So having a saying, a line from a poem, sometimes the little messages on the backs of yogi tea bags are useful for this purpose. And I try to keep a small collection of them on my meditation table so that I have something I can turn to when the intruding thoughts and the lists of things to do start to push their way into my mind. I am also grateful that the post has finally delivered two packages. One in particular I've been very curious about since mailing it in early December. I mentioned that I was participating in the Yarnder Woman swap. Miranda hosted a flat package swap, and there were a lot of international packages trying to make their way to their recipients. And it was Christmas, and I hadn't heard anything about my recipient receiving her package. I felt just terrible. But it turns out that some of the post was unusually slow this year. So I think that just after Christmas, Gemma did receive her package with everything intact. And yesterday, I received my package from Hillary. So thank you, Hillary Joan. I very much enjoyed the contents of the package. She sent some tea as well as a holiday card and some exquisite tatting in the form of a tatted handkerchief. It's absolutely beautiful. So thank you so much. The package, however, was very much worse for the wear. I could see when the package arrived in my hands why it had taken so long to get to me, because the address had been completely soaked through, and even some of the contents of the package, I think, were soaked through at one point and had dried out. So this mail went on an adventure. I have a feeling it maybe it passed through New Zealand or Australia on its way to me. I don't know. It seemed like it. Yarn Lover at Large. This coming weekend, New York City will be hosting Vogue Knitting Live, and I would very much like to attend, but I have not made any firm plans. I'm not registered for any classes, but I would like to take the day and tour the marketplace and hopefully see some familiar faces. When I know my travel plans, I will post them on the Ravelry board and maybe even send a message out on Instagram so that if you are there, when I am there, we have the potential to meet up and say hello. For quite a long time, I've been thinking about the possibility of hosting a retreat or getaway, and I have made some plans for such an event in late April. So if you are interested, I encourage you to tune in to episode 106. It will be a very short episode, and it will be dedicated entirely to an explanation of this getaway and what to do if you are interested in attending.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flurry as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like a millboard, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurtz sings, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a